Okay, so good morning to everyone and welcome. It's so exciting to see lots of people. That is something that we strive for, is to go, you know, to places that where we can get the input from the public. So I'm very glad that you're all here this morning. Let's start with, how about we start with introductions? We'll start up here with the board, and then we'll go through the public. And if you could just give your name, the town you're from, and if you're here on behalf of an organization, you could announce that too. But there's a lot of people, so we need to keep it short. I'll start. I'm Julie Johnson, and I'm from York, Nebraska, and I am the chairperson of the Board of Commissioners.
Nancy. I'm Nancy Oltman. I'm from Hastings, Nebraska, and I'm a board member.
Jim Urach, Omaha, and I represent the interests of the American Council of Blind in Nebraska.
Mike Hansen, I'm from Lincoln, Nebraska, and I am the National Federation of the Blind of Nebraska's designee.
Daryl Walla, Omaha, Nebraska, Board of Commissioners, and I apologize. I am going to shut my phone off right now. So I hate that one so much.
Good reminder for everybody. I'm Pearl Van Zandt, Executive Director of the Commission, and I'm from here in Lincoln.
You were Paulson from here in Lincoln. I will be doing the recording this morning.
I'm Kathy Stevens, Administrative Assistant for the Commission.
And then we'll start with the first row.
Okay, me over here in the corner. So Robert Newman, I'm from Omaha, Nebraska. I'm a member of the chapter of the National Federation of the Blind there in Omaha.
I'm Amy Burish, and my son Noah is also here. I'm a rehabilitation counselor in the Lincoln office here of the Commission for the Blind.
Carlos Cervan, Commission for the Blind, Deputy Director for VR Services, Lincoln.
I'm Cheryl Livingston. I'm from Lincoln, Nebraska. I'm a member of the National Federation of the Blind of Nebraska.
Alex Castillo, Department of Resource Counselor at the Nebraska Center. Here in Lincoln.
John Sailors of Shiver, Nebraska.
John's going to help with the meal today.
Awesome.
I'm Conchita Hernandez, a rehab counselor here in the Lincoln office.
Stephanie Wagle, board member for the Lincoln chapter, and I'm here to help with the meal today.
Hannah Linder, I'm from Lincoln, Nebraska.
Barbara Lowe's, Lincoln, Nebraska, member of the National Federation of the Blind of Nebraska.
And I'm Brad Lowe's, also from Lincoln, also at the National Federation of the Blind, and I'm just one of the huddled masses yearning to breathe free.
I'm Sharon Brenforder from Lincoln, Nebraska, and I'm the treasurer of the American Council of the Blind Lincoln chapter.
Terry Brenforder, Lincoln, president of the American Council of the Blind Lincoln chapter.
Also proud grandparent.
Yes. I'm Stephanie Eggers, and I'm from Lincoln.
And Stephanie's helping out with the
mail. All right.
I'm Charlie Salzman from Lincoln.
I'm Miranda Salsa from Waverly.
Miranda's helping us out.
Wes Majerus, Technology Program Manager, Nebraska Commission for the Blind, Lincoln.
Kelly Coleman, Lincoln, Nebraska, member of the chapter of NFB in Lincoln.
I am Zach Hoy from Lincoln, Nebraska, also a member of the NFB of Nebraska Lincoln chapter.
And I am Jody Schultz from Lincoln, Nebraska.
Who's that?
Allie Lashonsky from Lincoln, Nebraska. I'm a client with the commission.
And I'm Penny Lashonsky. I'm her mom.
Is that everyone?
I'm Connie Daly. I'm the Lincoln District Supervisor.
Now that's everyone.
And now that's
everyone. Nancy Plural has from Omaha has been running up and down with coffee.
Okay.
So she is here.
Yes.
And we wanted to come up and introduce ourselves, and now we're going to go back downstairs and start working. So.
Okay, just you and Nancy, or are the kids going
too? The kids are going too.
Okay. Okay. Sounds great. Thank you, guys. I'm looking forward to
Some of the people are
presenting.
Some of the youth are going to stay up and double check with Connie. Connie, is it correct? Some of the youth are going to stay up here and present to the board, and others are going to go. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
We were a little worried if everyone.
Well, I was hoping that maybe you'd come back in a few. I don't know. What else. Okay.
Hey, and if you need help, I'll help with lunch too.
I'm careful what you guys say.
Hey, you don't think I can't do it?
Yep.
Okay, there are Braille and large print agendas. If you would like one of those, Kathy, where are those? By the door or in the back?
On the table by the door.
Okay, on the table by the door are the agendas. There's also the Braille and large print text of the Open Meetings Act, which is the Nebraska law that governs how we run our meetings. And then Kathy is going to tell us about proof of publication. I hope.
The proof of publication, it was published in the Lincoln Journal Star. It was on the state government website. It was sent to ACB president, NFB president. It was placed on NFB Newsline. It was sent to Radio Talking Book. It was placed on the website. It was sent out to NCBBI Listserv. And I believe that's it.
Okay. So those are the places where our meetings are announced. So if you're interested in attending future meetings, or you know of someone that may be interested in coming, those are all avenues where you can get the information about what's coming up. Okay, our next announcement is regarding recordings. Our meetings are recorded so that we can place that audio on the website, and that will be available, 10 days to 2 weeks, something like that?
Yes.
Yeah, close, in a bit. And then our next announcement is about public comment. We do have specific time set aside for public comments, and I ask that you wait to speak until that time. And I will have, I'll take a list of people that would like to speak, and then we'll go through that list, and then if there's time, we'll get more names, and we'll just keep going until there's no one else that would like to speak, or we run out of time. If there's a lot of interest, we can extend that time somewhat, but we do need to try to keep on schedule. During the public comment time, you will need to speak into a microphone so that your comments can be recorded. The microphone is not so that we can hear in this room, it's so that it can be recorded. So please wait until you have that microphone, or do we have a space set aside?
I have put a chair up front here in the middle of the U with the microphone on it.
Okay. So during public comment time, you'll use that space with that microphone to speak. If you need an accommodation because, you may have difficulty moving into that space or something, just let me know and we will work.
It's a wireless mic. We can bring it to them.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
I'll be delighted to carry it around.
But the point is that we need to maintain order and speak one at a time so that everyone can hear the comments and they can be recorded.
Yes.
So, I think that's all about public comments. The next item is lunch arrangements, and our youth is going to prepare lunch for us, and then are we going downstairs?
Yes.
Okay, so then we'll move downstairs for lunch and then come back up here.
Julie, I don't know if there's room for everyone to sit down there. Some people can sit down there and eat. Others might want to bring their lunch back up. I think it might be a mix.
Okay, but the food will be down there, and then
yes,
we'll have
will.
To figure out
yes.
seating. Okay.
Right.
Sounds good. And then are there any other announcements regarding housekeeping matters? Did I forget
about where the restroom is?
Oh, the restroom. Is there just the one on this floor?
On this floor, there is one set.
Okay.
Two restrooms. They're at the you'll head east. It's not clear to the end.
It's just past the double door.
Thank past you. The double doors, and it's they're
the
set
right.
back in like a little alcove.
Just past the double door, make a right.
Yeah.
So you go go back down past the elevator, keep going down the hall, past the double door, and immediately past the double door, make a right turn.
Yep.
And it's a tiled floor.
Yep. Set back in a little alcove. And then so let's read the agenda. Have Daryl read the agenda.
I can do that.
Awesome.
Okay. So. We've talked about the logistics, the lunch. Then we will talk about the improvement of the November board minutes. Then we have our focus topic, which is transition services and the opening doors handbook. 10:20, we have public comment. 10:35 is our break time. 10:50 is report from the chair. From the chair. 11 o'clock is report from the executive director. At 11:30, there is NFB Newsline update. 11:35, client assistance program, CAP complaints or issues. 11:40, Nebraska business enterprise update. 11:50, public comment. 12 o'clock, we have the lunch. We start at 1 with new business, discuss and act on the process of disseminating the executive director's evaluation and staff surveys along with data collection for review at the May meeting. At 1:15, we discuss and act on potential commissioner travel, 2013 consumer conventions and or training opportunities. 1:20 is discuss and act on the meeting locations for May and August and potential focus topics for November's meeting in Omaha. 1:30, public comment. 1:45, final announcements. 2 o'clock, adjourn.
Okay. Any other final?
I don't think so.
Before we move? Okay.
Go ahead.
Also, I try to speak up and loudly enough for everyone to hear me, but it doesn't come naturally to me. So if I drift back into my quieter, more normal voice, just let me know, and I will try to get back to speaking more loudly. Okay, our first item then is approval of our November meeting minutes. Those are available. The draft version is available on the website for anyone to look at, and we have all had those minutes emailed to us and have had the opportunity to review them and make any corrections or changes. So, any discussion?
No.
Okay.
I will move the approval, of the minutes.
Okay, there's a motion for the approval of the November minutes.
Second.
And a second. Any other discussion? Okay, we'll have a roll call vote. Nancy?
Yes.
Jim?
Yep.
Daryl?
Yes.
And Mike?
Yep.
And I vote yes. Hey. So the November meeting minutes are approved as they appear on the website. So our next agenda item is the focus topic, which is...
Transition
services. And Connie went downstairs, so who is...
That'd be me, Julie.
You're facilitating it. Awesome. Okay, well, take it away.
Where would you...
No. All right, do you
want to... Do you need to talk into that microphone?
Yes.
That we can bring it to her.
So would you like to sit? Or...
I need to read a little bit. So
yeah, there is some room on the table here. Yeah.
Okay.
And then... Here's the mic. There's a chair.
Thank you.
Right there.
Okay. Right. So, good morning, everybody. My name is Amy Barish, and as I stated earlier, I'm a rehabilitation counselor here at the Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired Lincoln office.
It's hard to believe that I've been working here for about 12 years now. And watching as some of our youth have grown, it's been pretty awesome, and it makes me feel kind of old at times. But it's been a real pleasure, and we take a lot of pride in the transition programs that we have here at the Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired. They are very, very successful and very important to helping shape and grow competent, confident, skilled, successful young adults. And I think you're already very familiar with the programs that we offer here, specifically for our students, including our Winterfest program. We have one coming up here in a few weeks, in March, I guess, about a month or so away. That's held in the spring and in the fall. We also have our wages program, work and gain experience in the summer, which is what the title makes it out to be. It is true. It is a 6-week employment program where our youth come from all around the state, stay here at the University of Nebraska campus, Selleck Hall, and are employed for the 6 weeks. They earn a salary, which we pay. It's at no cost to the employer. And the kids get really valuable work experience as well as some time to live away from home and develop some of those critical independent living skills. You met some of our STARS kids, and I was looking to see what did we decide STARS stood for. And the teacher who helped create that, Mary Robinson from Fremont Public Schools, was unable to be here today. So I can email that to Pearl, and we can send it out to everybody. It's like student teen adventure in rehabilitation skills or something. I don't know. We thought we were very creative, and we'd never forget fully what it stood for. It's had several changes in what those particular words mean from time to time, because the students will say, hey, well, it could also mean, you know, social and, you know, all these other various things. So
I remember. It means some teens are really smart.
That's right. That's right. That's very good. I like that, too. And I think they would say, yeah, let's go with what Pearl said. We like that. But what I want to talk to you about today in particular is our booklet that we helped have a hand in creating, the Opening Doors book. I think it was in the mid-1980s when the transition team was first started. And that was an organization formed with members from the commission. It was Services for the Visually Impaired back at that time. Members from the public schools, teachers of the visually impaired, persons from NCECBVI, which was Nebraska School for the Visually Handicapped at that time, but persons that had an interest in transition of youth that were blind or visually impaired. And it was a way to sort of bring all the professionals, parents, concerned people to the table to try to develop and implement programs that would be helpful in the best practices to help youth that were blind or visually impaired through the transition process. The transition age is defined between the ages of 16 to 21. In vocational rehabilitation, we expand that a little bit to age 26. But over the years, there have been a lot of discussions, a lot of back and forth dialogue, and just a lot of questions about what age, when should this agency be involved, not only the commission, but other agencies, whether it be developmental disability services, or in some cases we might partner with the general vocational rehabilitation agency if a client has multiple disabilities. How can we best partner with the education teams, the IEP team at the child school, the parents, with the student themselves, just kind of how to put all those pieces together. And so I don't know who came up with the initial original idea to create this book, but it was decided that it might be very helpful to have this guideline that could be handed out in a written format that would succinctly identify kind of all these things where people had questions. So we developed a protocol developed by the transition team to implement recommended best practices to help assure that blind, deaf-blind, or visually impaired children and youth and their families receive the very best possible services from all available resources. And again, as I stated, begun in the 1980s, the transition team consisted of staff from the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired, NDE, which is the Nebraska Department of Education Special Populations, NCECBVI, Nebraska Center for the Education of Children Who Are Blind or Visually Impaired, parents, consumers, teachers of the visually impaired, and other agencies, for instance, like Developmental Disability Services. Since this booklet was developed, I should tell you that the transition team has disbanded. So as a group, we are no longer together, but we do continue the connections and the relationships that we have made. The book shows how NCBVI, NDE, NCECBVI, and TVIs, that's teachers of visually impaired, and I'm going to abbreviate these because it gets a little wordy, can closely coordinate services to assist students in a smooth transition from school into adult life. When multiple agencies work jointly with a student or a client, all sharing with differing philosophies that we have, the interest of the individual being served is what is most prevalent. That is what's going to prevail. The intent of the book was, again, to have in an easily accessible format a way to show when to refer students or clients, the responsibility of each agency for each age level, and the purpose of the agencies who may be serving blind students. Copies of the booklet are posted on the NCBVI website. It is on the Nebraska Department of Education website under technical assistance and on the transition page. It was a long process. I think the link has been sent out to you, commissioners, and so hopefully you've had a chance to take a look at it. It was a very, Pearl sat in on a lot of those meetings. I did some of our other staff and others in this room. It was definitely kind of a long process. We had to talk through and work through a lot of things. Anyone who's tried to collaborate on just a writing project with any other person, let alone something as sort of intense and kind of complicated, and we want to make sure we get all the right things represented in a book, it knows how intense it can be and how long of a process it can take. We continue to promote it through the teachers that we work with and to provide copies to our parents and to our students. There is a graph inside the book that does kind of easily show a real thumbnail quickly of how things might look and what ages and agencies and things. So we hope that it's useful to people. I'm not sure. Is Diane here yet? Diane Dittmers was going to be here, and she isn't yet, I don't believe, to talk to you. She was also on the committee, and she is a teacher of the visually impaired and had a pretty large part to play in helping us to put the book together. And so she was going to speak to you from a professional standpoint, how she uses it with parents and her students. But I also do have some consumers here today that I asked to come to share their stories. Some of them may be a little familiar with the book. Some of them not so much. Some of them you know, got started in this process as we were working on it, or maybe a little before or after we were putting it together. But their stories all illustrate examples of how we can work together and how the partnership does look, and kind of what how gives you a good idea of overall picture, I think, of what we're striving for. So, Kelly, are you ready? Okay. I want to introduce to you Kelly Coleman. Kelly grew up here in Lincoln, and her TVI happened to be Diane, actually. And so she is going to share her story with you now, and I'll let you come up here, Kelly, and take my share and get mine.
Thank you.
There you go.
All right.
Hi.
Is it on?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just recording.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. You
oh, okay. Got it. That makes sense. Hi. As Amy said, I am Kelly Coleman, and I am not familiar with this book, but I was introduced to all sorts of teachers of blind and visually impaired and the commission and all sorts of people. So. It sounds like a very good one. I was taught Braille at a very early age, at around 5, and used it primarily all the way through elementary school, and then got glasses in middle school, which helped me to read print, normal size print. And Braille at that point was taken away, as it was viewed that it was you know, too complicated, too expensive, all that stuff. So I used print primarily, and I had been given a cane at a very young age as well, but did not use it besides mobility O&M lessons. So I did not end up using that primarily until after high school. And in high school, Diane became my vision teacher and said, "Do you read Braille?" And I said, "Well, you know, I used to. I don't read it anymore, and I don't really need it for schoolwork." And she said, "Well, let's check how fast you read." And I read at that point probably around 20 words a minute. So it was very slow and very inefficient. And though I could read print, my eyes kept getting very tired. And so she said, "Well, why don't we get you back into reading Braille? You come with me every day, or you know, and you can read Braille. And do you use a cane, you know, at all?" And I said, "Well, on mobility, and I don't use it at home, and I don't use it in school." And she encouraged me, and I ignored. So,
honesty, you know.
After high school, I graduated and went to the Colorado Center for the Blind in Denver, where we use sleep shades, again, via Diane and Amy and everybody's encouragement. And at the end of said program, I used a cane. I still do all the time. And I ended up reading at 480 words a minute after that. So it is now much more proficient for me to use Braille and a cane than it is without, even though I do have some quote-unquote usable vision. So.
And what are you doing now, Kelly?
I'm a student at UNL, Child, Youth, and Family Studies major.
You'd like to be what when you grow up?
You know, she didn't say out, she said up.
Thanks, Amy. I would like to teach Braille to blind children, so that is my ultimate intention. So let's hope it works out.
Okay. Do you think if the book would have been around when you were in high school or younger, it may have been a help for your parents to sort of navigate the waters of professional?
I think so. I think if it had more professional things to look at and more people saying that it was okay for me to have a cane and Braille, and especially the book, I think they would have been much more willing to look at it and accepting of it.
Okay. Thanks, Kelly.
Am I done?
Is that you? Here's the mic back.
Does anyone have any questions for Kelly? Otherwise, Kelly's going to run downstairs and help our STARS kids. But
Madam
she'll
Chair?
Take questions.
Yes, there are a couple of questions.
Okay. Here, I'll give this back to you, Kelly.
Okay.
Thanks. Go ahead.
Actually, mine's for
Amy. Well, go ahead, Nancy.
Thanks, Mike.
Kelly, I was just interested to know that, you know, after those few years that you really weren't using Braille, but we always hear that learning Braille as a a child is so much faster, and I agree with that. But I just wondered, how long did it take you to, you know, getting up to 485 words a minute? Wow, I'm impressed. How long did it take you to get to that proficiency?
Well, I started with Diane probably my senior year in high school, started reading again, and read all the way through senior year, and then in Colorado, which took about 9 months. So, and I read every night, so it took about 9 months and constant practice and 9 volumes of Gone with the Wind to get me up to that speed. So, but it also, helped that I did learn it as a child rather than later on in adult life, mm-hmm. and it came back. It was like riding a bike, so it very much helped.
That was very fortunate that at least she had grade school to get a start on it that way. But I was just curious.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Kelly, actually, I do have a question for you. When, as you're going through the Lincoln Public Schools, I know that the Lincoln Public Schools has a group called VIPS, Visually Impaired. I can't remember what it stands for. But anyway, peer support, visually impaired peer support or something. Anyway, did you ever take part in the VIPS program?
No, I was not in elementary school. I was not given the opportunity to take part in those programs. My family was a very big component of making me as sighted. So
yes,
mm-hmm. No,
okay.
I did not.
And that I guess would have. Was going to be my next question was did you take part in any of the youth programs put on by the commission?
I did.
I mean, Wages or the Winterfest or
yes,
anything.
Yes. In high school, I did go to Winterfest, and then I did 2 years at the Wages program.
Okay, and what value did you as a student come away from those programs with? What kind of an impact did they have for you?
Winterfest, honestly, when I went there, I realized there were other blind people, not just me. So it taught me a lot value-wise about that there were people that had canes and that could do things very well and had jobs, and it showed me that I could be employed and competent as a blind student. And then Wages gave me a lot of good work experience, and it showed me my first taste in a college dorm and how to have a roommate, and so they were both very valuable.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Jim has a question.
One other quick, Kelly, you had indicated, and maybe I missed something, but you had indicated that when you were in school, middle school, high school, junior high, whatever it was, that you had Braille, and I think the words you used were taken away from you. Did you take it away from yourself, or was it taken away from you by the teachers who, quote-unquote, knew better?
It was a little bit of both. I thought at the time that I did not need it, and a lot of the teachers were very agreeable to that, and they said, no, you know, you don't need it. You're very able to read print, and your eye doctor says you can. So it was a little bit of both ways.
And see, I understand what you're going through. When I was in they called it junior high in my day, because Daryl and I are probably the oldest ones on the board. outside of, anyway. I didn't say it. Anyway, at the point, could read Braille at conversation level. And knowing what you went through with that and having Braille taken away from you, I made the decision myself to take it away from me, because I thought at the time, who needs it? And yeah, there's nothing wrong with reading print and magnified material and all that, and because it's good to do that. But at the same time, I think it's also good to know it, just in case you're in a position where you need it. So I understand what you're going through completely. Although you were doing a better job at Braille than I did, because I am nowhere close to 480 words a minute.
That's very
especially
very
with today's
awesome.
Technology, I probably never will be. So.
Okay. Can I have a couple quick questions, and then I promise we'll let you go.
Okay.
At what age or what grade did you start participating in the planning process, like attending IEP meetings or making decisions about Braille, large print, cane, when did you make those decisions?
Well, I guess, let's see, probably, I would say more upwards of probably middle school to high school. I had gone to my IEPs at a very young age, but I was never, I mean, I was talked about while I was in the room, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yes.
So I guess I was older when it started, when I actually started getting into the planning.
When they started listening to you?
Yeah, I remember when I attended the first IEP meeting that I was invited to as a rehab counselor, Kelly on my caseload, and I was just, I remember being really impressed because she seemed to be taking it very seriously and had thought out, you know, her comments are always really well thought out and very respectful, but definitely very clear on, okay, this is me, Kelly. This is, you know, kind of my future. Here's kind of what I really think. And she, I was really proud of her for that because we don't see that all the time in students. Mm-hmm. And so that is one thing that, you know, Kelly probably won't toot her own horn a lot, but she really was very, very good at that and has only grown in, you know, her advocacy and things as she's gotten older. But she had a pretty good handle on it when she was in high school as well.
Yeah, I think that makes a huge difference.
Okay. It's when kids feel empowered to, like, make their own decisions about their own life. Yeah, that's a big deal.
I'm still not doing that.
So, awesome.
All right.
Okay.
Are we good, Gerald?
I think so.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you. Good job.
Good luck.
All right.
All
right.
Next, I would like to introduce to you, all these people are here because they've had different unique aspects to their story, and I want to introduce Jody Schultz to you now, so if you want to come on up this way down the center aisle, Jody, right up here towards the front. Jody is also a client of ours. She has been with us through the transition, her own transition process, and also now as a parent of a blind student right here, Jody. Mm. So we'll let Jody share her story.
Or stand, whichever
you
prefer.
Yeah, whichever you feel comfortable with.
I'll sit.
Okay.
And Jody, would you mind spelling your name? There's a couple names, ways we could do both Judy and Schultz. Jody, I'm sorry.
That's
Jody.
Right. My name is Jody Schultz, and that's JodySCH. ULTZ.
Thank you.
Traditional way.
Yeah.
The right way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I started working with, and it used to be services for the visually impaired, in the 1980s when I first started losing my sight. My mom is like my best advocate. She wanted to find services for me as soon as she could. As soon as I started losing my sight, and I worked with Shelly, Shelly Prince, yep. I worked with her, so it's been a long time ago.
And there's one up here.
Exactly. And so, learned Braille very young. Didn't really use it a whole lot, but she helped me. She came to my school. She talked to my, you know, my peers, my friends, to let them know about, you know, just because you're blind doesn't mean that, you know, you have to be treated different, your person. But then I started just using, working with LPS and using a lot of enlarged print, magnification, and stuff like that. And let's see. When I was in junior high, I started coming here during the summers, and I went to classes with Amy and Shane. So
no stories will tell, Jody.
I don't have stories. So, you know,
during the break.
No. Exactly. And you know, did that. I did the living skills, did the Braille, JAWS program, which helped me to really, you know, make a decision, you know, do I want to learn the Braille? Do I want to keep with it? And I learned that it was faster. So when I was in junior high, I told LPS, I said, because I worked with the visually impaired teachers there, I said, I want to really get to learning Braille. So I have it as a backup just in case, because with my vision issue, I have optic atrophy.
which has to deal with the optic nerves, and it's just basically being held by a string, my vision, mm-hmm. and they're pretty surprised about what I do have left. So they did all that, and I worked with services, like I said, during the summer. I didn't really go through the program proper, but they were always here if I had questions. They went to my IEP meetings in high school. They were always here if I needed to talk to somebody or get some feedback on something. And now, my little boy Joshua, he has optic atrophy, and he is going, well, he's not going through the program yet, but he's in the STARS program. He couldn't make it today. He decided he wanted to go spend time with his grandparents last night. So
that's pretty important too.
So yeah, exactly. So he didn't make it today.
How old is Joshua?
Joshua is 7. And he's just starting to learn how to do the cane, which kind of scares me because he likes to balance it and put it in the air, and I'm like, no. So, but you know, and he's learning Braille. He knows how to do words and everything in Braille.
He's
so
doing good.
Yeah, he is. Good. He is doing good, and I'm very proud of him. And so, yeah.
Jody, mm-hmm. When you were growing up in the Lincoln Public School System, I was asking Kelly about VIPS, mm-hmm. and I know it's a. I don't know a lot about it, if there's a student here that's in it, you know, maybe I can ask Amy about it more in a little bit. But I guess in the back of my head, I think of it a little bit like maybe STARS or TABS in Omaha or something, but being done by Lincoln Public Schools on their own instead of something that's being done through the agency here, through the commission here. But was that available for you?
Like different programs that you could go through?
Did Lincoln Public Schools have a group of kids that were visually impaired where they got you together as a group so that you could interact with each other after school? So you could meet other blind kids, and it was happening. You got that chance besides when you came to the commission or to SBI in the summer?
Not really. I mean, we'd all get together like during the holidays and stuff, like, you know, during, like, for Christmas, we'd all, like, there'd be groups of us, other mm-hmm. blind students, where we would get together and we would hang out.
But so it wasn't formally organized.
It wasn't formally organized, no.
Okay. Uh-uh. Okay.
No. I think there is someone in the back that has a comment related to your question.
Sure. I know that Kelly, my daughter, will speak to it when she's up there, but I know Kelly was involved in it too. What might have confused her is that it's called the VIP Club.
So I'm sorry. I'm thinking VIPS because VIPS is a senior blind. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I wouldn't let it go, but I thought there are people that will know it if you call it that.
Yeah, I apologize. No, you're absolutely right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm awesome, Renee.
Yeah. You can talk about it too when you come up.
Awesome. I'll appreciate that then when you get up here.
I thought we had a potential lawsuit. VIPS. Copyright.
There are a lot of acronyms.
I know.
Yeah, totally typical. Yeah.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Okay. So the Lincoln Public Schools at that time didn't have anything set up like that for the
kids.
Like, okay.
Not like they do today.
Okay. How do you think the services have changed, you know, from when you were in school to now when your son is receiving them?
Oh, wow.
Is it better or worse?
Okay. I think it's better. I think it's both better, you know, it depends on when you were going through, but I don't know. I think it's still as good as it's ever been.
Okay.
I don't know. I come here now. First time I came here, when I seen all the changes and every, mm-hmm. you know, everything, I'm like, wow, it's like, it's more structured. It's more, you know, where, like, when I went, it was like, you go to this person's office for this and this person's office for that. And now it's, like, more structured where you have the Braille room and you have this and that. So, mm-hmm. so yeah, I would say, you know, it's still as good as it was. So,
see, and Jody, I would probably echo that because you and I went through the client of the services at the same time. I started back in the mid-80s or 83, I think Robert called me up and said, deal with your blindness or else. He didn't say he didn't say it like that, but words to that effect. And, well, hey, you know, Robert's very, you know. But anyway, I think to answer Julie's question, it's gotten better. Not that it wasn't good then.
Yeah.
But it's gotten better because, A, we have a different executive director, mm-hmm. and, B, I just overall I think it's more structured and all of that. You're right. So. Mm-hmm.
If I might ask a question, what was the extent, I know you know, went to high school and things, what was the extent of your transition into the adult world? Were you employed?
College? Yes, I went to college, and now I am a senior at UNL. Mm-hmm. I have a child.
You had your break. What you went.
I had my break. Yeah. went to high school.
Right.
Went to college. I got a job. I worked in UNL daycare for two years.
Oh, good.
And then I worked at my mother-in-law's church at their was a preschool for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then I decided to, you know, and during that time settle down, have a family. So college was put on hold for a couple of years. And then I called up, you know, the commission. And I said, okay, I'm ready to go back. I'm ready to finish this degree, close the door. And they go, well, Amy goes, well, come on in. So that's all we need to do and get the paperwork started. And
now, did you present once at one of the round two?
I think I did a long time ago.
Did you?
Maybe that's what I remember.
I've had
a dog then. I did.
Yeah, I have three dogs. I've had three dogs, so.
What's your
maiden name?
And that's part of transition, too. You know, when you think about the cane versus the dog.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that?
Both ways are good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like the cane, you know, because, you know, some things with dogs you just can't do,
exactly.
Like squeeze through small spaces, mm-hmm. but I love my dogs,
it's
too.
Good.
I
yeah.
mean, pick I like the companionship, the mm-hmm. safety. Mm-hmm. Like now, working at night, I can't see good at night at all.
Right.
I've gotten lost mm-hmm. in my neighborhood mm-hmm. once. And that was enough to scare the heebie-jeebies out of mm-hmm. me. And I'm like, I need a dog. I need a dog now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I still alternate back and forth. And I still keep my cane with me when I use my dog.
Mm-hmm.
So just in case I have those incidences where it's like, okay, I'm not familiar with this. I'm taking you by the leash and I'm healing you. And we're using my cane. And then I'll work her through it after I, you know, do it myself. So
good answer. I have a dog too, and so I was just telling Mike over here, it's hard to just get up and walk 10 feet.
It is.
And
it is.
Make your dog get up.
Yeah.
I like. Yeah, that's good. I like
yes.
That.
Oh, and somebody asked me what my maiden name was.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah.
It was Rockenbach.
Okay, that was you then.
Yep.
I remember that. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
Good job.
Okay. Other questions?
Nope.
Okay.
All right.
Thank
good
you
job.
So much.
You're welcome.
And good luck in college.
Yes.
Yeah,
thanks for giving up
some
of your Saturday.
Tickets.
Thanks for coming.
Uh-huh.
Tell Josh we missed him.
Okay.
All right. Next, I want to ask Allie Lashansky to come on down. And Penny, if you have comments you want to share as well, you're more than welcome to provide the parent perspective. Allie recently completed her time with LPS and is now a student at Southeast Community College. And so she's going to share her unique story here with you. Hi, Allie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You may sit if you would like, or you may stand.
I am Allie. I am Allie Lashansky. I had two strokes when I was a baby, which is why I am visually impaired. Mm-hmm. I have been this way. My vision has been the same since I was born. When I was in elementary school, I think first or second grade, I started using Braille, but I never really got proficient at it to the point where it was a practical form of reading for me. So I just, in fifth grade, my vision teacher came into the classroom and she saw me using, she saw me writing, taking notes off of the overhead. And So they just decided that I didn't need Braille, and my parents agreed with that, so I just stopped learning Braille. And in middle school, I still wasn't using Braille. I still am not to this day. I live at home with my parents. I am currently a student at Southeast Community College. I participated in the VIP program with LPS. I still am a member of it, and...
You kind of you're a mentor now. You kind of come back and.
Mm-hmm. I help plan the activities. I decorate. If there's decorating that needs to be done, I'll help set up. I'll go and help the other students participate in the activities. I started working with the Commission for the Blind when I was freshman in high school. And they have helped me financially with my college education, as well as my counselors, and everyone that I've known here has been a huge support system for me. I also participated in the wages program when I was 16, I think. Yeah. And I was in the Lincoln Public Schools voice program. I had a job at Hy-Vee over on 70th and Pioneers. And I also worked at Southeast Community College doing typing jobs for the Human Services Program as well as for LPS.
And the
child care. Oh, yeah. I worked in the child care area for a semester while I also had a job working at workforce development, because they were another support system, and they helped me get a job there.
Mm-hmm. That's after your wages work, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then can you tell them about what did your voice like? Like, you got to take classes at SCC while you were helping. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
While I was with Lincoln Public Schools, I also was taking Southeast Community College classes. I took one class per quarter because I was a full-time, quote-unquote, LPS student. And when I was in voice, I got to lead my IEP, my IEP meetings. I got to make PowerPoints and...
Right. Yeah, good. I was going to say, explain all that.
And I got to take a huge role in how the IEP meeting was run. Yeah. And I also got to help them make decisions about what happened in my LPS career.
I'm fine. Right?
Could you? Yes, we don't know what the voice program is.
The voice program is through Lincoln Public Schools. They take the kids with special needs, and like anybody with like a vision impairment, any type of special needs is can be qualified for the program. They
after
high school. Sorry,
right,
yeah.
So it's
18 to 21, and they put you in a job site, and you have that job for an LPS semester. And then you can either stay with that job, or you can switch and get like a different job somewhere else.
Okay, so it's to gain
vocational opportunities and community experience is what it stands for.
Okay.
Okay.
I think some of us were thinking you were in singing.
That's what I thought.
She likes music too.
Yeah. So, see, so do I.
No. Offers vocational opportunities and community experiences.
Okay.
So it's their transition program.
Right.
Okay.
For post.
That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I was thinking, how does singing have to do with?
So for Allie, it was preparing her for college.
Right.
Okay.
But also for jobs.
Allie, I wanted to ask you about VIP Club, and this is leading up to some questions that I'm going to ask Amy about here when we're all done with your guys' presentations.
Okay.
But can you tell me a little bit about VIP Club? How you benefited from it? I'm curious, for instance, like how often VIP Club met?
I've been in VIP Club since before it was called VIP Club.
Okay.
So since I was in like seventh grade.
Is that when it starts for, is that when it just happened to start, or is that the youngest that anybody's allowed to participate?
The VIP Club is for middle and high school students who are visually impaired or blind. It stands for visually impaired people.
Okay.
And we meet once a month, and like we'll go and do different things. Like in January they went because I was unable to attend, but they went and took a karate lesson because one of the vision teachers does karate. He's
like a triple black belt or something. Oh. Yeah. Don't mess with
Kevin. Yeah. Don't mess with Kevin. Yeah.
You do all kinds of community activities.
Yeah, like we'll go to the movies at the Grand Theater where you'll see a movie and they'll just you wear the headphones and they'll describe it. Or we'll go and we'll have like a cooking lesson.
Do the backpack walk.
Yeah, so every year we do the backpack walk. At the end of the year, we'll go to Champions. It's a lot of fun.
How does it help you out?
Yeah, what have you gotten out of it? How's it helped you?
I found out that I wasn't the only one that had this condition, disability, blindness, disability, whatever. I found out that there was other people like me because, you know, I had always been treated, you know, I had vision, used my vision by anyone that knew me. So I found out that there was other people like me and that it was okay that I had this and I was able to talk, I was more able to talk about it. And, yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
So what are you studying in college?
Yeah. I am in my second quarter in the Human Services Program at Southeast Community College.
Awesome. So what are your plans? Where are you going with that?
I hope to work with, like, families and children. Maybe working somehow with children with disabilities, helping advocate for them, or...
Okay. Awesome.
Very good.
Ellie uses technology.
Hold on. This is her mom, Penny, and I'm going to give her the microphone now.
There you go.
Yes, I'm Penny Lashansky, Ellie's mom, and I would just add that I know a lot of people use Braille, and Braille was an option for Ellie. Because of her physical limitations, it's not an excuse why she didn't use Braille. She did learn it, and it was presented to her. It didn't seem to be the most effective means because of the amount of usable vision she has, and that always was her preference, to hold a material and look at it versus using Braille. But she was exposed to it and learned it. She's a huge technology person. That should be her future career goals. She's the fastest typist you'll ever see with one hand. She can, for those that can't see Ollie's stroke, she doesn't have fine motor coordination in one hand. She uses her other. So for Braille or for typing or anything, it's just right-handed. So technology has been Ollie's way to write, read, interact. So.
Okay.
And the commission has been incredibly wonderful, and Amy has been a guiding force to help Ellie with her path through all transitions. Well, Amy's been involved since, like we said, beginning of high school. But I also work for LPS, and I have to toot LPS's horn, too, and say that there have always been very quality people working with Ellie. Vision people have been involved with Ellie since she was, like, 4 months old. Her first eye surgery was at 2 months old, and we've had people involved all along. So she's had superior services through the commission and through LPS.
Mm-hmm. Questions?
Nope.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thank you very much for coming on Saturday. Okay, last but certainly not least, now I want to introduce Stephanie Eggers to you. Stephanie is, what, have you been a client for a couple of years maybe?
About
2 years now. And Stephanie is still in high school. She's working through her transition process, and she's involved in also a very unique program. An employment program, which I'll let her tell you about, that we're all very excited about as well. So
here's the microphone, Stephanie.
I am in a program. I am in a program called Project Search / Voice, and my Project Search where I am at this year is NBC Suites. Some of the stuff I do is like my first semester, a rotation. I was in engineering, and I've learned how to change air filters and clean the rooms and fix stuff that was leaked. Then my next rotation I'm at still right now is in the kitchen. I'm learning how to cook food, learning how to do dishes, and we have one more rotation. And I get to choose where I want to go. I'm trying to stay in kitchen. Because in kitchen, you get free breakfast, free snack, free lunch.
Wow. There you go. Perks.
And then I'm graduating at the end of this year from LPS. Can't wait for that. And last year, I went to Wages. It was a lot of fun.
What job did you do there?
I was at, it was at one of the colleges, Selleck. I was in Selleck kitchen doing dishes, wiping tables, wiping down chairs. And at the end of the year, I might be doing Wages again, but then I'm going to move into the commission right after that.
You didn't have a very long commute to work last year at Wages, did you?
Right there, it's a
deal.
Just
down the sidewalk. Yeah.
So, talk about, is there anything else you
want to
share about? Anything that you're
Oh, yeah. I have, my family is pretty much either legally blind or blind. I'm glad about that because I'm not the only one in the family.
Yeah, that's good.
So, it helps me out. My goal is to learn Braille totally so I can play Uno with my grandpa.
Nice. Yeah.
Well, Terry might beat you, but that's all right.
She can take you on, Grandpa.
And I'm trying to learn Braille as soon as I can because I can't really see small print, and big print is even hard for me to see.
Right.
So I'm trying to use Braille and learn Braille as soon as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And LPS is saying once I learn Braille, everything will be in Braille for me after that.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
So when did you start participating in making choices and planning your services?
When I was about 18.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you go to your IEP meetings and...
Yes.
Okay.
I have been in special ed pretty much all my life, but it hasn't all just been vision.
Okay.
Did you participate in the VIP club as well?
Oh, yes, I do.
Okay.
Last time we went karate, we did karate. It was fun.
Oh, yeah.
That's what Shane said.
But there was some issues, like where they had to help me hold up because they did some balance stuff, and I'm not good with balance in it right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they held me up. It was fun. We learned all those Japanese words, but I don't remember what they are. And cool. Ko is setting up a night or a day, Saturday morning, where we can go do karate lessons.
Mm. That's great.
You have a maybe a little bit different experience, life experience than Allie did, in the sense that, like you were saying, that many of your family members are either blind or visually impaired. So you grew up with a lot of blind people around you, and it, you know, and interacted with them and knew different techniques and alternatives as you're growing up. You might have a little different experience as far as what kind of value you get from the VIP Club program. Can you tell me how that what VIP Club means to you? What you get from it?
VIP means for me where I have a lot of friends that really care about me. we always have fun. I learn new things, and I meet a lot of new people, and it's fun.
Okay.
Great.
One question. When you first started participating in Project Search, did you have a lot of input into that process, and did you get to pick where you started?
Actually, no. I didn't know I was going to Project Search until at the end of last summer. We had to do an interview. And they picked me. Mm-hmm. I think there was only 10 people every year that can go to NBC Suites for Project Search. Mm-hmm. And I was one of them. Mm-hmm. And then we had these skill tests that we had to do. Mm-hmm. And they picked me because I have really good detail. And I'm not like, I would do any job they give me. Mm-hmm. So they picked engineering first.
Wow. Okay. That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Yeah.
But you like the kitchen better.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely food. Yeah.
Not that. It's just everybody in there is super nice.
Yeah. 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 That's good.
That's really
good. Like, they understand me being legally blind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They help me with everything.
Working in a kitchen there is a lot different than working in the kitchen at home.
Yeah.
So what are your goals for the future?
My goal is to either work with animals or work in the kitchen. My true job is I want to be a vet tech.
Oh,
that'd
be good.
Be great.
Okay.
Cool. You don't want to be a plumber or anything?
No.
You had experience with engineering?
No.
Buildings?
Yeah, we need some bathroom work done at home.
You'll have to plant seeds of in your counselor's minds about wages next summer about working down at the Humane Society.
Yes, that would be
neat. Yeah, we could probably hook that up. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Thank you. Other questions?
We're good.
Thank you so much for coming, and best of luck.
Good luck.
Absolutely.
And good luck beating Grandpa Uno.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so thank you to all the consumers for coming today on Saturday and sharing their stories with all of you. I think they provide each of them some unique perspective and individual perspective into their own stories and gives you a little bit of insight into some of the great clients that we get to work with and kind of how all the pieces fit together. Are there any other questions that you guys have?
I have a question. This is a really neat booklet. I actually put it on my Pac-Mate and sat there and read it thoroughly. And transition is something I'm really interested in.
Maybe you could encourage your other teachers where appropriate to read it, Daryl.
There's one question that I just came about. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not getting something.
Yeah.
It said it's with the referral process. It says initial inquiries must be referred to the special education director or appropriate administrator of the local school district if they have not yet been contacted.
Uh-huh.
Now, this can't be initiated on their own or
Pearl, if you have a comment too, this is just really kind of illustrating best practices. We wanted to make sure that all the entities involved would have a chance to, you know, to be aware so that the child could receive services that they would be entitled to receive, and then the family could make decisions accordingly. But because that's, we're looking at the laws and all those kind of things. So,
That's mm-hmm. it. That last phrase of if they have not been contacted, right. The main thing. is just what Amy said.
Because eventually they're going to be involved, so they're going to know.
The educators are aware of the child. And
the way I kind of read the packet was it kind of seemed like there was, at different age levels, there were maybe primary entities that are involved.
Yes, that's
right.
And there was a statement in there about a no wrong door entrance into.
Yeah.
So no matter who they contact first, you want to make sure that the primary entity, which would probably be with kids, going to be the schools, is aware and making sure that they're on board.
Correct.
Is that right?
Okay. Yes. There's a couple of comments I want to make. One is Diane Dittmer's, one of the wonderful things that she contributed during the developing of this is kind of a concept about the driver.
Yes.
And that we might all be going in a van together. The student, the family, voc rehab, the schools, you know, the different, sometimes PT or OT. And so we're all in the van moving down the road, but at different points, a different person might be driving. So we thought that was pretty cool concept. The other thing I want to mention, so I don't forget it, is that we have lots and lots of these booklets printed up. And, of course, they're available accessibly on the Internet. But if you know people that you would want to take some to distribute, I'd encourage everybody to feel free. Kathy brought a stack down, but we have boxes. So we have lots anytime anybody wants to distribute. Thank you.
I happen to bring my backpack. So that'll
be there you go.
Yeah, and I'll grab a few of those. I know the school, the high school, they could use them.
Well, just so you guys are aware, when this was first developed and printed back a couple years ago, I don't remember exactly. But we did, do a mass mailing to all of our appropriate clients and families, as did NDE and all of the school districts and the special ed departments, the ESUs, should have received copies. But, whether they're being used or distributed, we can't say. All we can do is just try to make the people we come into contact aware,
reminder.
Exactly. So that would be good.
I have kind of, and I'm not sure, what are your thoughts about Project Search?
I think Project Search is an incredible program. There are several locations throughout the state of Nebraska now. Mm-hmm. We've had clients participate throughout the last few years at a couple of sites. It's very successful. I think it gives practical work experience. I mean, real practical work experience. Mm-hmm. They are treated, there's mention of the voice program, and there's other good ones, our wages program, that do similar things. But these are getting school credit. They are treated as employees of wherever the employer, whether it be Embassy Suites, St. Elizabeth's Hospital, or the York.
And
I serve actually on the York team, and they've had a very successful year, and it's great. The kids have an opportunity then to apply for a job.
I guess my concern, what I was hearing from Stephanie, and what I have a client that I work with, not blind, what I'm hearing is that the youth are really not choosing Project Search. They're kind of being told, this is what you need to do. Mm-hmm. And not giving, not really making, for example, my client that I'm working with, her passion, her dream is art. She wants to go into graphic design. Mm-hmm. She wants to do like auto detailing and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the hospital in York doesn't offer those kinds of opportunities. It's not a good fit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But she's getting a lot of pressure. You should do this, you should do this, you should do this. And I'm hearing, Stephanie's story, it worked out. She loves it. It's a good fit for her. But I'm still hearing that the young people didn't have a big input into making that choice, to understanding what they were getting into and being on board with it. Mm-hmm. So what is your thought? Are those two the you know, the anomalies, and most of them are not like
yeah.
that?
I don't know. In the situations that I've seen, I haven't really heard that. That's not to say that it's not happening. I mean, okay. I can't speak to every situation. I think, you know, where possible, I think they'll try to fit, you know, people with their interest. I mean, that's what we try to do with wages,
right.
but we can't always, because it depends on mm-hmm. the employer that you get to sort of cooperate and be willing to be a part of this program. And, you know, we look at, for Project Search, large employers like Embassy Suites or like a hospital, that kind mm-hmm. of a thing. And I think the thing that at least I try to tell the students that I work with is that, yes, you're going to have those particular things that you are passionate about, that you're really interested in, that you'd prefer to be doing, but the reality is we all start out at a job that we really, you know, it's not what we want to do forever. It's just a kind of a starter where you kind of learn those beginning skills, people skills, social, mm-hmm. you know, work ethic, some of those kind of things. And so then maybe you can build on that and get some opportunities. You know, they don't have a lot of those kind of things, but maybe through some of the, you know, graphic design stuff through the hospital,
you know,
or Cornerstone or something. You know, I don't know.
Right,
but
and maybe it's a communication. You know, they're saying, oh, you should go work here because it's a job and,
uh-huh.
you know, these wonderful things. But they're not presenting it as building work skills. They're presenting
oh,
it
right.
as...
Mm. And that's unfortunate,
because
yeah. that's
yeah.
what it
yeah.
really is. You know, the students do have an opportunity when they have completed the program, if there is a position open and they are interested. I had a student who worked at St. Elizabeth here in Lincoln she went to Norris High School and was a part of Project Search. And when she graduated, there was a part-time position that was available at the hospital.
Right.
She applied, and it was that experience that helped her then, you know, mm-hmm. to have a leg up and to actually
mm-hmm.
get that job. She's still working there now and going to SEC part-time. So, you know, it kind of just depends. It's probably not, and it's not going to be the best fit maybe for every student either. I mean, for all its successes
right.
and its benefits, you know, I think people have to take that in mind. And I think maybe Pearl
yeah.
had some comments as well.
Yeah.
Well said, Amy. You hit a number of the points I was going to make. The other thing I want to say about Project Search is that it is not specifically for blind students.
Mm-hmm.
And we partner with the Vocational Rehabilitation Agency, the general agency,
mm-hmm.
and each search project is specific to an entity, like most have been hospitals, and then they're branching out a little bit, as Amy and others have mentioned. But we do partner with Voc Rehab and those corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And in some areas, we haven't had a blind child involved, but we're still active in the project because we really believe it helps those major employers. Sometimes the hospital is the major employer mm-hmm. in a town or a county, and helps them to see the value of employing people
right.
with a range of disabilities. So there's a lot of good reasons to be involved. And absolutely, the first job most of us had out of high school or in high school is not what our career goal was.
Right.
So anyway, those are just
yeah,
a couple
and
points I wanted
I
to make.
I want to be clear. I mean, I think Project Search
Thank
is
you.
A wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good opportunity. Mm-hmm. I think it's an excellent program. I just think we need to be mindful of how we present that opportunity
yeah.
to young people.
Yeah, sure.
And
yeah.
when they say, you know, I really don't think that's for me, we need to
respect
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think, you know, when you get professionals involved, it some people sometimes have a hard time sort of stepping away,
yeah.
you know, and letting their own personal bias or their or thoughts or whatever, what they
mm-hmm.
feel may be best. And maybe they're right down the road, you know, maybe they're not, but you're right. I mean, it does need to be, you know, a choice of the student and,
yeah.
you know, and the parents and that kind of thing. So.
But I think failing is an important thing on its own. You know, I think people need to have that experience. They
right.
need to be allowed
mm-hmm.
to fail.
Yeah, it's a good lesson.
And I think, you know, that's another thing, you know, with youth that sometimes we miss. Is sometimes you have to not read Braille and you have to read print to realize, oh, that was not a good choice. You know, but you
yeah.
have to have that experience mm-hmm. to get
right.
there.
I'm sorry. Do we have any parents still in the audience? Or
Penny's still here.
Okay, I want to ask you a question.
And the grandparents.
Okay, good. Okay, I want to ask a question because I know I'm a special ed teacher. I teach in high school. One of the big things in school now, of course, is standards. And you have to pass all these tests and things. Do you feel that that direction, with all these standards, and kids have to, you know, you push them into all these higher level classes, has that, do you feel that has interfered with the vocational components, kids getting a real chance to work and look at careers? And I have my definite opinions on that, but.
Well, let's see. This is Penny Lashansky again, mm-hmm. Allie's mom.
Mike.
Well, testing and meeting district standards has always been a challenge to mm-hmm. us because we've always felt like, try as they might to accommodate for Allie's special needs, sometimes that isn't maybe done as well as it would be for a sighted person. For example, when she took the ACT, uh-huh. you know, they had all the accommodations mm-hmm. down, but she had to look at maps yep. on the ACT uh-huh. test, and afterwards she said, Mom, I couldn't even see those. And I'm like, oh, man, they accommodated as much as they thought they could, and yet yeah. that wasn't. So that's just an example, I guess, where standards, she doesn't always probably
right.
get tested as thoroughly, yeah, you know, but I think that they do a good job at least attempting.
Yeah.
And then as far as her vocational, they did lots of voc exploration things in mm-hmm. school. So I think they tried to tease things out for her, and we've kind of, as parents, steered mm-hmm. her maybe towards or away from areas just based on what we thought mm-hmm. her needs would better be suited towards or might be even more of a challenge for her. Unless she had a great love of a particular area. I don't know. Yeah, it's tough. She's been through the commission mm-hmm. and through the vocational opportunities. She's been allowed to try experiences that weren't as well suited for. And that's how she found out. Somebody said something about sometimes doing things and failing, or maybe not just doing as well, maybe not failing, but... finding out that, oh, that's a lot harder than I thought. Allie found out some of those things through those experiences, right, Allie? Mm-hmm. And that was beneficial for her. Mm-hmm. Everything doesn't always come easy for any of us, and so she was able to say, that's a lot harder than I thought, and I really don't love that, so I'm not going to go that way.
Right.
Did I state that right, Allie?
No. Yeah. Okay. I totally agree with you, and we just have gotten away from, you don't want to track students, but it's nice to be able to have a, you know, vocational courses, you know, business math, things like that. I know a lot of that has gone from some schools because...
Yeah, Allie definitely wasn't tracked. In fact, mm-hmm. you know, when they would do standardized tests and things, they would say her mm-hmm. cognitive abilities are such that she shouldn't be tracked. She should be allowed to pursue what she mm-hmm. wants. Yeah. And so she was always steered that way, to college-bound, to mm-hmm. those...
Sure.
Does not help too.
See, and I agree with that assessment. A number of years ago, I was given one of these so-called vocational tests to figure out what my career goal should be.
Yeah,
now, I'm going to tell you something, folks. I am not an animal lover. I'll put that right on the table. When I got through with that test, the number one career choice for me was veterinarian.
Yeah.
So we'll figure that out.
Yeah.
But the inventory, the vocational stuff that they do is gives you some really good results, you know. One of the things, you know, whether you're blind or deaf or if you have learning disabilities, try as Penny said, try as you might, those accommodations are there, but it's still sometimes hard to get the optimum score that you'd want on some tests and things.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
Amy, as I said, I was leading up to a question for you.
Yes.
With some of the questions about VIP Club.
Yeah.
I know that obviously the VIP Club exists here in Lincoln Public Schools. Mm-hmm. I've heard that Kim Adams had done something I think similar in Fremont, and I'm not sure if her successor is still doing
she
that
does.
Or not.
She does. Yes,
okay.
She does.
And I don't know if there's something like that in Omaha at all. But obviously, these areas that I'm talking about are where there are some larger concentration of blind children. So when we get out into other areas of the state where there might be only one blind child in the county, you know, let alone the school district, or maybe in some cases the county is the school district. Some of those opportunities don't exist at a school district level, and I would think that initially reading the packet that the transition mm-hmm. packet it was worded very carefully,
yeah.
And reading between the lines, it definitely sounded like the groups that it was probably a real tough effort to write, that there was a lot of differing opinions that came to the table. And it this protocol that was set up was to try to keep everybody's thoughts in mind, respectfully, as children grow up, and to try to make sure that the best things are whatever the best course of action is for a student is always kept in mind.
Yeah.
But you know, I guess I'm knowing that there might be some differences of opinion on the way that children should be educated. I guess I wonder if programs like Wages or Winterfest or some of the other youth programs that we offer are communicated to the younger kids where that could definitely benefit from them, especially the ones that are in these smaller communities where they don't have their own programs in the school district. I mean, are we reaching all the kids that are out there, or are there a lot that are still being missed and that we're not finding out about until they're much older?
Yeah, that's a good question. The outreach process is one that just continues to grow, hopefully. We continue to try our best to build relationships within the ESU units and with the teachers of the visually impaired, with the staff at NCECBVI in Nebraska City, and try to disseminate our information as much as we can and as broadly as we can. Undoubtedly, there still may be some that we miss, especially when they're younger. I mean, we try. We can only sometimes, we can only work with the children or the young adults or the clients that are referred to us and that, choose to sign up. In order to be eligible for our programs, they do need to be clients of our agency. So but we do try to, through the transition practitioners committee that I serve on and, other entities like that, we do try to promote our programs and our information. We've done some mailings and, things like that. And then in each of our communities, maybe Pearl can, address the statewide effort. But I know that everybody kind of tries to do the same thing. We just try to be out there, attend as many fairs, transition, programs, and youth-related kind of type things as we can, as we're able to try to just get the word out there so parents, families, and teachers alike are informed and aware of what we do have. There are still, a number of clients that we don't hear about or that we find out about as they're exiting high school. A referral that I had just shortly before Christmas is a good example of that. The young man is a senior in high school. He's going to graduate this year. Had no idea we existed at all.
That was me. I found out about the SBI at 18.
Right. So there, you're good. I mean, that's
you know, you're a good example of that. And it sadly still happens. You know, much as we have improved, I think things have a great deal improved, but it's still out there, you know. And meeting with his parents and with the young man, he, you know, they were all just like, wow, oh my gosh, you know, we had no idea, had we only known, you know. And now we're playing catch up just a little bit, you know, so that he can be as comfortable and as prepared as he can to go on to college, which, you know, he's making plans for at this time. So we see that, we do see that happen a lot.
Amy, can I ask a question?
Yes.
This young man that you're talking
yes.
about, did he have any opportunities for learning Braille or, you know, I don't know if he's... Or cane travel or anything like that at all?
He does receive services now from the LPS Vision staff.
But he didn't before
He hasn't throughout his whole career, his whole schooling career. He does have an IEP now, and he does receive services. He is a fairly high partial. For him, and this isn't true in all cases, in this particular situation, mm-hmm. I think still like Zoom text and low vision, you know, he's able to work really well with those at this point in time. And but we see others who come to us at a similar time as he and where they clearly would have benefited from having had the opportunity to have Braille introduced or other alternatives because they're at a complete deficit, and then we have to start teaching those skills, you know, at the time when they ought to be thinking about college yeah. and, you know, moving on, but instead...
I think that's real interesting that, you know, we send up, the commission sends out material to schools and all this, and still we are... losing people, you know, so-called in the cracks that just
yeah.
kind of fall through. That's just real interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's sad.
But
I wish there was a magic fix-all.
I wish there was, too.
We haven't found it yet. One thing I did just want to say before I forget, and I'm sorry, Nancy, I didn't mean to cut you off. If you have any questions, please cut me off. Mike, you were mentioning the other groups and kind of whether they existed around the state or how that kind of worked, and it made me think I should maybe just address that real quick. Mary Robinson, who is Kim Adams' successor, she does have a group in Fremont, and they work on a lot of skills, you know, blindness-related activities after school, and our staff do participate and help teach that, and we also bring in mentors, peer mentors as needed or, you know, when it's appropriate to help with that group as mm-hmm. well. We in the Lincoln District, Shane in particular, has worked with the Fremont group and the Lincoln group. Most every meeting he typically is there at both of those groups and will help sort of facilitate those. A distinction, I guess, a little bit in between like our STARS group or TABS maybe and the VIP club is VIP, it is partially educational, but it's not a – it's an after-school activity. So the VIP staff that work that program volunteer their time. It's kind of something that they set up on their own. And it's definitely a little more social in its focus and scope probably than – I mean, there is learning that always goes involved with everything, but I think as a whole, it was set up initially, and somebody can correct me if that's wrong, but this is my understanding. I think that it was kind of established initially to be a social outlet for students to get together and kind of build that camaraderie and things.
Let me take that back for a comment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think
that's
out. Yep. The VIP club started out as a social event that happened once a month for middle and high school students. It was me and like two other girls. It was Kelly Coleman and Hannah Lindner. I'm sorry. And we had like one teacher that would go, and we would always do like some sort of make like a snack, like I don't know, popcorn or something. But it was always geared around the social aspect of it. And as we got, like, a bigger group of people, we would do, like, different things. We wouldn't just go to, like, a school setting and do social activities. We would go, like, to the movies, or we'd go to karate lessons mm-hmm. with Ko Imanura, or we would go, where did we go? We had a Christmas party or stuff like that.
Thank you very much. Annie, did you have anything else? Okay, thanks.
So is there a, and I apologize if this was in the packet, and if it is, I missed it. Is there a requirement that any IEP that's going on for a visual impairment, that the parents be given a copy of this booklet?
I don't think it's a requirement. It's suggested. You know, it's like best practice. You know, it's urged. But
okay.
I don't. There's not a mandate or anything.
Okay.
We're just trying to encourage.
Okay.
That.
And I'm just trying to think of. You know, I just have it in the back of my head that there's. And I hate to say it, but that you know, there's some that there might be some. TVIs out there that, for whatever reason, just disagree with the commission or disagree with ECBVI or whatever, or just think that they can do things, and I'm just gonna I kind of have this impression just because I grew up in an environment where I didn't learn about the commission until I was 18, part of my, I was a high partial, so that might play into it a little bit more, but having, I guess I just want to make, whether or not a parent chooses to make use of the services that we can offer is one thing, but I guess I just want to make sure that they have the opportunity to be able to make that choice.
Yes. Agreed. And that's what, all the parents that I talk to and, have worked with over the years and that we hear from, that's exactly right. I mean, and that's what we keep striving for. We hope,
yeah.
I mean, just so that, because everyone needs to know, I mean, for my own kid, I would want to know if he was disabled or if something happens, that you want to know all of the, let's get it out, all there on the table, what is there available, what are
right.
my options?
Right.
And that's what we, we're trying. So if anyone has suggestions or avenues okay. maybe that we mm-hmm. haven't done out, we'll take them because we want to, get the word out there because we feel that we know how valuable our services are. You've heard it from our students today. We see it time and time again. When clients are successful, when they achieve their dreams, when they live life, normally. That's what it's all about. You guys all know that, and that's what we want to do, and that's what we want to help our clients to do. And so we need parents and students to all be educated and empowered so that they can do those things and have all the pieces on the table. So, but yes, I think you're right. I think the perception is a lot of times, well, maybe we'll make a mention and we'll give a brochure when a student is 14 or 16. And then, they're senior. Crap. Now what are they going to do? Uh-oh, they're exiting the school system. I guess we better hook them up with that agency.
Right.
But we see that happen a lot, too. So.
And that's a good question because I think, as I understand it, I don't work with blind, visually impaired mm-hmm. students, but you have to give them the sign-off sheet and give
right.
them the pamphlet on parent rights.
Yeah,
and we do have brochures on general, on transition. But I don't, as far as I know, I don't think we're required to give that to them. And maybe that's something that should be written in Rule 51 because we do have to do a transition plan. So maybe there should
right.
be something in there that that they sign off to that they've been given information on.
Yeah, and different school districts do things a little bit
yeah.
differently as well. We've definitely
mm-hmm.
seen that.
Oh, yeah.
Going back to also around the state, there's a group that's just starting in Norfolk that we're starting mm-hmm. as a commission, but as organized groups and within a school mm-hmm. system, because they're all much smaller
right.
around the
yeah.
state, you're correct, Mike, when you mentioned about how students, it may be the only one, or maybe there's two,
mm-hmm.
Especially in the more rural areas around the state.
Mm-hmm.
So Lincoln and Omaha, I think, are the only ones that might have. Well, actually, do you know, Robert, does Omaha have in the school system like a group? Or Nancy,
not that I am aware of.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
NTI has UOPS, I know, because to the group that's in the Omaha office by the commission, but he never talks about something that the school has.
Mm-hmm.
Robert.
Robert was just saying he thinks mm-hmm. that. From a mentor that he's worked with at OPS, does not have a formalized program like Lincoln's VIP Club, but the commission does have a group,
right.
TABS, T
teen adventures and blindness skills.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, the other question I had for you, Amy, was, and thank you so much for that. But the other question I had for you was, I know that the, you know, the I guess the identified product that was being looked for by the transition team, or its purpose was the production of this book, and now that the book has been produced, the transition team has been I guess officially disbanded. You said that you still stay in contact with others and are trying to continue the relationships that were formed while that process was going on. I've heard in the past, I'd heard that there was a comment here or there about that there might still be a need for a transition team. What its purpose might be, I guess officially I don't know, but do you think that there's still a need for a group of people to be able to be assembled to discuss topics of concern or issues that are arising to continue to refine a process, or this is done and it's on the shelf and we're utilizing it, we're actively utilizing it, and the need for a transition team is no more?
That's a good question. I think the group, when it was decided to sort of disband, you know, when the group was begun in the mid-80s or so, there was a lot of unknown about the other entities. They didn't know about each other, didn't know how to or who or where to refer blind kids, and the process was a lot more broken down even than it is today. I think the thinking among everyone was that we've kind of sort of reached a plateau where we sort of all understand each other now. We know about each other. There maybe just wasn't anything further really that we could do. I mean, that we're always going to have issues. There's always going to be things we can discuss, and some things we agree on, some things we do not agree on. Mm-hmm. But I think, for now at least, the thinking among the parties involved was that we got it. You know, we didn't have a strong enough, large enough purpose, I guess, to justify spending, you know, the grant monies and things to gather. I don't know, Pearl, do you have it? We still do work on the agreement. Do you want to talk about that? The agreement that we have that you sign with?
Right.
Yeah, there is a memorandum of understanding signed by the special populations director at Department of Education, myself for the commission, and the director of the Nebraska Center for the Education of Children Who Are Blind and Visually Impaired. There also is the Transition Practitioners Group, which is statewide, that includes educators, rehab, and other people, and Amy is on that. There's also connected to the Board of Education at the state level. And then I serve on the Transition Advisory Council, which also is connected to Department of Education, Board of Education. So those are kind of statewide entities. But even, I mean, when the transition team met, it's just a handful of people who represent us and educators and families. It doesn't get to the individual that's in Ainsworth or, you know,
right,
McCook. And so I really believe that it over the years, it served a very good purpose, the team, for educating each other. There was a period of time, there was a really good newsletter that came out of that. So there were different things over the years, not just this work product.
Okay.
But most importantly, I believe today, is that grassroots educators, rehab professionals, and families getting acquainted with each other, knowing what the resources are, and as our community, as our counselors are active in their communities, whether it's with networking or their churches or just clients and being in communities, then if that rehab counselor and that teacher and that parent meet each other, that's going to do a whole lot more than me sitting in a room with a couple other people.
Yep.
So I really believe that it's not that we don't need a transition team, but rather we really need a strong grassroots component of educating each other.
It sounds like what I don't want to, I guess I don't want to demean a particular group, but what value that team at this point might bring can be accomplished by some of the groups that are that are still in place today.
Yes, that's what I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And the newsletter was called Changing Times.
Yeah.
I can't remember if you want to Google it.
Changing Times. It was a good thing.
Yes.
Another piece, and we've gone way over our time, but it's a really important topic. If every single blind, visually impaired child in the state were referred to the commission, we don't have the resources to serve them all.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, you know, the point of where we would get involved or, and part of, you know, I mean, the amount of involvement we might have would change over the years. Sometimes for a family with a younger child, really we just need to expose them to a bunch of opportunities, maybe put them in touch with consumer organizations and things to read, other parents,
right.
And then we can phase out and get more involved as the child gets older, or with our programs if the child comes, you know, a year to something or whatever, that's not a bad thing. We definitely don't have the capacity to really provide the direct training to every kid. So, but we just want to make sure folks know that we're here as a resource, and also then that we educate folks about the resources in education. Thank you.
And just one thing, just to add really quick, in best practices, you know, whether it be when a student is younger, which is, you know, below the transition age, like in elementary school or middle school, you know, or whether they're in high school, you know, what we want to do is just help to support the teacher and, you know, kind of supplement. So what they're working on, and work together hand to enhance what each other is doing. That's the best practices. That's, I mean, the best scenario, you know, and
absolutely.
We hope that we've, you know, showed you today some examples of some of those best practices and how and where it has worked well in its best case scenario, and that's what we strive for in all of our relationships and working with our clients.
Right. Good job.
Okay.
This is a changing topic all the time. So, I mean, some of us won't be on the board, you know, a lot longer. So, I might just make a suggestion that, you know, we kind of visit this as possible focus topics every couple of years or so, because it's,
you
know, maybe that and the senior blind, you know, or something that always changes.
Okay.
All right.
Do you have any other questions?
I don't.
No.
Mm-hmm. Very
thank you.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you very
much.
Really appreciate your time, Amy.
Thank you very much to the students and parents that have spoken. It's really great to hear from you.
Yes. Thank you very much. And best of luck to all of the young people and all of your plans and goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to suggest that we take a break and then move on with the
public comment
after the break. Is there any opposition? Okay, then we will reconvene.
No.
Like 5 after 11, we'll try.
10 minutes.
Yes.